Okay, the five love languages was created by a fellow named Gary Chapman. And what he basically did is develop the idea that we speak different languages of love. If we want to connect to somebody, we want to show our love, and we want to receive someone else's love, we do that in different ways. And he developed the following five ideas. Again, we'll go through this quickly for those who are familiar. Words of affirmation. Some of us speak a language of compliments, of being told how good they are, being told how important, how special, how appreciated they are. They just need to hear. If you want to tell somebody who speaks that language, if you want to show them that you love them, the way you do that is with words, whether they be written words or spoken words. It's a language that what they hear, the language they speak, or that you telling me things that you appreciate and recognize how good I am and the things that I have done. That's the person who speaks a love language of affirmation. Mark Twain is known to have said he can live for 2 months off of good compliments. That is true for many of us. A true good compliment is the kind of thing where it could just carry you for a long time. That's one language. A person speaks that language. There's another language, quality time. If you want to show me that you love me, you will spend quality time with me. You will dedicate time and you will spend it with me. And you could talk to me all day long. You could give me the greatest card for my anniversary with the mushiest, most sweet, endearing card. But if you don't show up for dinner or take me out for dinner and we sit and talk, I will feel as if you don't love me and blew the whole anniversary. Even though you wrote a 4-page card expressing and listing all the amazing attributes, like, that was nice, like, when are we going out for dinner? Because that's just how I communicate. I communicate through spending quality time, and that's all that I want to hear. Others, through receiving gifts. Language number three, I need gifts. If it's my anniversary, it's a birthday, I expect a gift. It's just taken as a given that if there is going to be a significant occasion that we are going to mark, it will be marked. Oh, thank you. Do you remember?
No.
Oh, yes. It will be marked through a gift. Now, people who don't speak this language, whether or not it's because you didn't grow up with it in your particular family of origin or it just doesn't mean anything to you, gifts are simply sort of waste of time, meaningless things. I'm not interested in your gifts. I wish you wouldn't have spent the money and the time getting this. If we would have spent that time hanging out together, that would have been much more valuable to me than the gift that you gave me. But then there are others that if you miss a gift on a significant occasion, you have failed. It's over. It doesn't matter that you went out to dinner and you presented a mushy card at dinner so that you have the hour, 2 hours together and the mushy card. But at the end of the night, like, your spouse is expecting the whole time for you to whip out something from behind your seat and it never comes because in your mind you're thinking, like, we're going out to dinner, like, this is our celebration. But that gift is missing and your spouse speaks that language, she will go home angry and upset and disappointed and you won't get it because, I mean, I wrote a mushy card and took you out to dinner. What's left? Well, so you got to recognize if the language that's being spoken is one of gifts, well, then that's another way of communicating love through the giving of gifts. Number four, acts of service. Basically means doing things around the house. If you do the laundry this particular day, you make lunches for the kids, you mow the lawn, clean up that, whatever it may be, but it's you're doing something, you show me you love me when I come home and you list it, whatever it may be. Dishes are put away, house is straightened up, lawn has been mowed, whatever it may be for you and your particular self in your marriage, that's the language that talks to me. When you want to show me you love me, you don't spend time buying me gifts and you don't take me out to dinner. What you do is you take that time and you take care of something that I appreciate having been taken care of. Which means in our previous example, you could even present the gift. But if when you get home, you say, I'm going out to daven, you make lunches for the kids tomorrow, then you could have blown the whole thing because, like, that was the one thing she wanted. Like, well, give me a night off of making lunches. The dinner's nice, that was cute, and the gift was really sweet and special, and, you know, the mushy card, but, like, all I need is a break. Give me a night off of all of my chores. That's the language that I speak, and you missed it. Then that's also a significant thing to be aware of. And lastly, is physical touch. Some people speak a language in which the physical touch between the couples is the language that they speak. If you leave without giving me a kiss goodbye in the morning, you have basically declared we're in a fight. Now, if you have a spouse who speaks that language, you need to know that. That little kiss is not just a little kiss goodbye, have a good day. That actually says, I love you. And if you miss it, or if you dare go to bed at night without the kiss, goodnight, like, forget it. Like, you have literally declared, I am angry at you, and we are in a fight. And you could expect to be woken up and interrogated as to what's going on. Kind of like, I don't understand what's going on, but nothing happened. But something did happen, because there was a language that was violated. Now, physical touch means much more than just intimacy. Whether it's holding hands on a walk at night, a rub on the shoulder as you pass by each other, walking through the house, it has many more communications than the most physical of touches, which is obviously significant and part of that, but it means much more than that. It's much more subtle, but regular, physical forms of affection, and that's a love language. Some of you are blessed to be married to spouses who speak all five languages. It's a wonderful gift. You don't have to worry about it. You know, you have to do all of them always. And it's just a gift. You don't have to worry about it. It's straightforward, and it'll just keep you busy from morning till night, because there's always one that needs to be fulfilled. Others are not as clear, but if you'll spend the time, so the question that I began with, if that big date is coming, how do you want it spent, and how does your spouse want it spent? So we'll take our first little pause to work on this. Now, if you're familiar with this, now the reason why I wanted to do this, even though I figured many of you have heard of this before and are familiar with it, I have also heard of this before. I've actually read the book, and I've given a workshop on this before, and it was actually just two nights ago that I actually sat down with Rifki for the first time, and we discussed. Sometimes you hear it like in context, but you don't actually have the time to then turn around and say, so what language do you speak? I can guess, but it turns out I wasn't exactly accurate, and that's an important thing to be aware of. So take the 5-10 minutes now, go through them. It's that big day is coming up. First, but the way I want you to go through this is guessing each other's. This one is not the activity like where you tell your spouse. This is the one where you have to guess your spouse's. See how you do. You're allowed to have more than one. So if you have your top two or even top three, that's fine. But the closer or the higher ranking you can go with this, the better it is for your spouse. But the first thing to do is actually guess each other's, and then take the 5 minutes, and if they're wrong, very gently correct them and point them to the right direction because of the significance of how that goes. Go ahead.
This won't help us.
Words of affirmation is difficult to go through because he thinks it's guided. It's like making or plotting it. Do you somehow have words to that? Yes,
great deal of different problems, expressing words of appreciation and compliment, right? Because he thinks I'm going to get a smart man out of it.
You're not starting to tell me that at all. That's what you're doing.
I have a person that likes. It's like we have a bunch of money having dinner. So which of those five?
Okay,
I
think okay, maybe in a second. I don't
know.
What's that?
Yeah, but not the day.
Yeah, like how, no, the activity of planning the day would really sum it up in terms of what one would want the day to look like and what one another would like the day to look like. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That's the most important. Rather than getting wrong or right, is knowing what it is. Yeah. Then Ben is stuck.
Ben is too old. All right, one more minute, just finish up the conversation. Okay. Quick show of hands, just for my informal studies for future reference. Out of the 17 or 18 or so couples here, how many of you would say that you, as a couple, speak different primary languages within the couple? That's pretty. So that's all of you. Just about. Yeah, no different. That actually would speak. So just about all. Now that's pretty significant, especially if you disagree with your husband's assessment or wife's assessment that you speak a different language. That's important to know. But this is the kind of thing where the truth is, just to make mention of that, all of us speak all of these languages. We all appreciate being told how good we are. We all like words of affirmation. We all like being told by our spouse that they appreciate us, that they think we're wonderful, they think we're the greatest, and they think that they have the greatest gift to the planet by having married us. We all like that. We all like spending quality time with our spouses. That's why we married them, and we all enjoy receiving gifts. But there are different levels. Not only are there different levels that we have a primary one, but during different stages of our life, they change. So it's important to be in tune with that, that while one's primary language might be, say, quality time, but if a woman has a baby, all of a sudden that switches to acts of service for the next 2 years. Like, I don't want quality time. I just want you to take care of everything, and that's how you'll show me that you love me. And it switches. And if you're still focused on quality time, then you're going to be missing the boat, because it shifted. And life has a way of doing that. Both, it does that within weeks, within months, within years. There is clearly a primary language that we will always speak, and we will always react and relate to a certain way of having our love shown to us, as well as learning how to give it that way. But it's important that we often, for those of you who show love, or actually I should say it that way, for those of us who receive love in a different way than our spouse wants to get it, that's a very important tool. This tool is classic. That if the way my love language is, for example, if I make up acts of service, and I think, therefore, when I want to do something for my wife, so I think in terms of, well, what can I do for her? Because that's how I think. If I wanted her to show me that she loves me, I'm thinking all the things that I would love for her to do. But I'm trying to show her love, and she's not thinking that way. I need to get in tune with what she's looking for, which is a whole different thing. That's why this is so difficult, especially since about 90% of you do that, which means that when you naturally think of giving of doing something for your spouse, you're thinking about through your lens, which is different than the lens that your spouse is most likely thinking about receiving it. So this is a great little tool. Hold on to the card and keep it in mind. You'll find many, many instances where it comes into play. Okay, that was just a sort of introduction. The reason why I wanted to introduce that, A, it's a nice thing to begin with just as far as the conversations go. And number two, I want to introduce the second concept that this fellow, oh, by the way, this fellow Gary Chapman who wrote this book, Rabbi Mordechai Pollack, He's a pastor of sorts. I'm not sure which denomination he is. The book is filled with all sorts of interesting references. Rabbi Mordechai Pollack of Dunwoody has gone through the book through Gary Chapman, taken all of that reference out, wrote his own introduction, and is having it printed as a Jewish edition of the Five Love Languages. So if this topic speaks to you, you can look for it in bookstores soon, the Jewish edition of Love Languages. He wrote another book on the concept of apology. So I want to pass out, so we'll start with the next thing. There's a scenario on this card. There are actually three. Just focus on the first scenario. And you can all answer this individually. You and your spouses should both get a card and go through this scenario and choose the language that you would most prefer. The scenario is as follows. Case number one. During Shabbos lunch, your spouse makes a comment about you in front of the company that, while funny, embarrasses and hurts you. So now you're sitting at your own table. You've been embarrassed by an insensitive comment that your spouse has made. I'm sure this has not happened to anyone here. But he or she recognizes the mistake, pulls you aside in the kitchen before dessert, and says one of the following statements. Which statement do you want to hear? Figure that out. Go through the five, and you could first think about it yourself, and then you could talk about it. This will be sure. We're going to do this much longer, but just go through this and see if you could figure out which one you want to know. This also has more than one. If there are two, that's also fine. If there are three, that's fine. But note within your five options, A, B, C, D, and E, which one do you really want to hear as your spouse apologizes for that comment? Work on this yourself. What do you want to hear? As an individual, what do you want to hear from your spouse as they apologize? Huh? Yeah, figure out which one you want. As an individual, what do you want to hear? Not guessing what your spouse wants to hear. Figure out what you personally want to hear from your spouse when they pull you aside in the kitchen and apologize. Yeah, you can share. 100%. Yeah, you go right ahead. Sometimes the process of elimination helps in this kind of activity. Like if you read one and it's like, nah, I don't want that, then you're sort of left with the ones that are significant. No, you can just do case one. Just start with the first. I mean, we'll get to that in a second. But. Okay, we'll have more time to talk about this. I just wanted to get it started. This card in your hand right now might be the greatest secret to the success and happiness of your marriage. This card is fantastic. Because has anyone here ever had to apologize before? All right, fine. Once, maybe twice, like maybe at best, right? Now, why is it so important to understand the skill of apology? Right, that's a really a question that doesn't need to be answered. Right, because as human beings, we make mistakes fairly regularly and consistently. It happens. That's part of life. It's part of a happy marriage, and it just needs to be. We make mistakes. That's what goes on. Sometimes they're on purpose, in spite. Sometimes it's just accidental, but it happens regularly. Now, the Creator of the world was well aware of this. In fact, that the sages say that even before he created the world, he created the concept of tshuva, created the concept of repentance, because as a human being, we could not exist in this world without that concept of repentance. We simply need it to go on. Now, the reason why I love this little tool is because so often we apologize, and it doesn't seem to work. It just, like, I don't understand. I apologized, and you're sure of it, and you really did apologize. And for some reason, it lingers. There's something that's still there, even though you apologize, and you tried really hard to be honest and sincere. So what's missing? So the truth is, if you go back, you don't need Gary Chapman for this. You can go all the way back to the Rambam, Maimonides, and before him to the Talmud, discusses this, but just not, they didn't quantify it in the same ways. When you think about a full apology, there are actually several components to an apology. If you flip your card over, you have your five languages of apology. Now, on Yom Kippur, we actually go through this. There are four steps that the Rambam lists that's required for a successful tshuva, a successful day of Yom Kippur. You have to acknowledge what it was that you did. You have to state it. You have to feel remorse and regret over what you did. You have to accept that you'll never do it again. There's a whole process that really goes into a full and complete apology. And I want to go through these because you'll see this is absolutely fascinating, and I'll share with you my little informal study that I did as I was preparing for this. Language number one. Acknowledging the hurt and expressing regret. Some of us, when we are accepting an apology, when someone has wronged us, as we're listening to the apology, and we're trying to determine, is this person sincere? Do they realize what they've done? Do I accept this apology? What we're waiting to hear is the concept that they recognize that they have hurt us, that we have been pained, and that they feel bad about that. I just need to hear that the person who has hurt me recognizes that they hurt me. And until I hear you say that, until I hear you say, I am the cause of your pain, I have done something wrong, and I feel bad that I did it, you can say anything else in the world, and it doesn't hit home. Because I need to hear you say that. I need to hear you say, you recognize the pain you caused me. Or you could speak language number two, which is accepting responsibility and admitting fault. Which means that when I've been hurt, I'm sitting at my table and I've been embarrassed, the first language would say, I need you to hear and say, I embarrassed you. I hurt you. I'm sorry that I did it. That's what I need. That's the first language. The second language, I'm not interested in your recognizing the pain. I know that I'm hurt. I got it. What I need you to say is get up there and admit that you were wrong. In many fights where there's an apology necessary afterwards, what one party is waiting for is for you to admit, you stubborn fool, that you were wrong. And until you say it, I don't want to hear the excuse that you started and I was responding to you, and if you wouldn't have done that, like none of that. I need you to get up there and admit, I made a mistake. I was wrong, I made a bad judgment, whatever it was. But until I hear the words that you acknowledge that you did something wrong, I can't move on. Because I think, therefore, in your head, that you acknowledge that I'm hurt, but you haven't taken responsibility for the fact that I'm hurt. You're still thinking that if I wouldn't have said this, and you wouldn't have done this, and the situation was like this, then it wouldn't have happened. No, you made it happen. You're at fault. And therefore, until I hear you say something along the lines of, I was totally wrong, it was inappropriate, poor judgment, I'm sorry for that. I can't move on. I can't move past this. The apology isn't complete. Language number three is making restitution. There was a mistake that was made. How do I fix it? What do I need to do? The relationship has been severed. It's been damaged. I just embarrassed you. You're my most precious gift in the entire world. And I just embarrassed you in front of all the company at the Shabbos table. And I start saying things like, I really hurt you. I know you hurt me. That was my fault. I know it was your fault. What are you going to do about it? That's all I want to hear. I don't need you to acknowledge my hurt. I'm hurt. I know it. I don't need you to acknowledge that it was your fault. I know it was your fault. I need to hear from you. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to show me that I really am your most precious commodity? How are you going to show me from here on out that you do care so that I know it's going to be different because you want to do something about it. You want to make it better. Whether or not it means suggesting in the kitchen, would you like me to apologize? No, I don't want you to do that, but I want to hear you try something. I want to see that you're trying to make it better. Then there's a fourth language that says it won't happen again. Things will be different. I don't care about the past. I just know I've been hurt. I know it's your fault. Just, I want you to tell me, commit to me now, this won't happen again. Because if you can't say that, then you can make all the acknowledgement in the world, you can tell me that you're at fault, and you can try to make it better, but if in the back of my head I haven't heard from you that it won't happen again, then I can't move past it. Because, all right, you're going to fix it now, but you know what? There's going to be a Shabbos again in 7 days, and I don't know what's going to happen. And I need to hear you say, this won't happen again. So it's not making up, it's not making it up to you, it's committing that in the future it won't happen again. Number five is requesting forgiveness. This I personally found less people in my informal study, but it's a language out there and it needs to be done in some occasions as well, to be able to actually say, listen, I didn't intend to do it. I have nothing else to do other than to just stand in front of you and beg your forgiveness. I need to hear from the person who hurt me, stand in front of me and say, please forgive me. Actually say those words. Please, will you forgive me? Can we move past that? So I need to hear that. And until I hear that, I can't move on. Now, when you put this together, by the way, with our introvert-extrovert discussion of last week, it actually creates quite a hilarious scenario in a home, because the introvert, who draws their energy from within, and they rejuvenate themselves when they're quiet by themselves. So if there was a little fight in the house, and I know most of you are intermarried as far as this goes as well from my discussions last week. So the introvert is everything is churning inside. Everything is being worked on. They're thinking, they're working on it. Whereas the extrovert processes with people. So something happened. There was a mistake that was made. We'll talk, it could be whatever it could be. Let's say they don't talk about it the Shabbos day, but it's working Shabbos afternoon. And there's this icy little chill in the house because I was embarrassed at the table and I'm waiting for my spouse to apologize. And we know that's what's going on. So the introvert the whole time is working on it. They're literally sitting down, processing. Why did I do that? What did I mean? Oh, it's a mistake. And they're working on acknowledging that it was their fault. They're working on admitting it, on acknowledging and admitting and work. They're working on that because that's the language that they speak. Meanwhile, the extrovert just wants to talk about this. They don't want this person sitting there quiet. They're like, where is the communication? Don't you know we're in a fight? And the introvert knows that we're in a fight, and that's why they're thinking about it. But the way that they're processing the fight is by thinking about it. So the extrovert is pacing back and forth. I can't believe he's not saying anything to me because doesn't he know we're in a fight? Like, where's the apology? Meanwhile, the introvert's working on it. He's working on it. Now, his language is the language of accepting responsibility. Let's just take, for example. So he's working on being able to really, with a full heart, say to his spouse, it was my fault. Which is not easy to do for anyone, certainly not for an introvert, and certainly not for someone who that's their language, but they're going to do it. The extrovert's language is, let's say, making restitution. How can I fix it? So she or he, let's also think the husband's one sitting in the quiet, and the wife is pacing, how could he not say anything? Finally, after 10 minutes of silence, he gets up and he says, sweetheart, I made a mistake. It was my fault. He did it. He acknowledged. Meanwhile, she's thinking, she says to him, 10 minutes of silence and all you have to say to me is, it's your fault? I know that already. Of course it was your fault. What are you going to do about it? All she's waiting for is to hear that. And now she eats his head off because that's the apology? That's what you have to say is, it's my fault? I know it's your fault. I'm waiting for you to say, like, what can I do to make this up to you? But he doesn't say that. He spent 10 minutes working on just being able to say, it's my fault, and he thinks he did it. And meanwhile, the apology totally falls flat, and it doesn't help at all. I asked 5 people this. I just gave him the scenario around the base medrash, around the shul, just getting a loose ball. I actually got 4 entirely different responses as to what language people spoke. 3 out of the 4 or 5 times, so the person said to me, oh, it's B. And anyone who says anything else is totally wrong. I can't even hear. If that's the language that you speak, you're going to do anything other than that? Of course it's B. Of course it's C. Like, what difference does it make? I don't need to hear words that it was your fault. Of course it was your fault. What are you doing about it? How are you going to make this up? this is key. It's such an interesting, fascinating study where we try to apologize often, and we sometimes like, why didn't it work? And it often doesn't, because we missed what our spouse really needed to hear. I'll tell you one other fascinating thing. I was speaking to somebody about this, a friend of mine, and we went through it, and it turns out this guy's language was D. He said, I don't care about any words. I don't know anything. I just want to know that you're not going to do it again. I don't care about anything else. Just tell me it's not going to happen. So he told me after I went through this whole thing with him, turns out his wife speaks A. And he said to me after, he says, oh my goodness, he said. He says, you know, when our four-year-old beats up on the two-year-old, so the process that we have is we put the four-year-old in his room. And when he's ready to apologize for what he did to the two-year-old, we let him out. So I put him in, and he's ready. He says, okay, I'm ready to come out. So I said, and what do you have to say? He says, I'm so sorry that I did that. And he said to me, and I always say to him, so what? Where's the apology? And the little boy says, I'm so sorry that I did that. And he says, you're not getting out there until you apologize. And he said, in his world, an apology is, and it won't happen again. When his wife's been putting the four-year-old in the room, her language is recognizing that someone was hurt and saying, I'm so sorry that I hurt the little two-year-old. So when he deals with her, he learned that what he needs to say is, I'm so sorry that I did it. And then she lets him out. And then he gets in there with him, and he doesn't know what the kid's talking about. Like, who cares that you're sorry? Are you going to do it again or not? Because until you say you're not going to do it, you're not getting out of this room. So he's like, that's so interesting that this poor kid's going to be ultimate. I don't know what's going to happen to him as he grows up. But that's what happens in terms of how we really speak this language. And this is a fascinating thing. So what I want you to do now, with that background, go through the other two cases on the card and just talk it out with your spouse to be clear on the language. Some of you probably speak two. Most people, I think, actually speak a combination of two. Some of you might get up to three. A perfect apology would actually have all five components. I really got, you know, this is what I'm holding in. So I'm working on preparing this. So someone sent me an email today that I was supposed to have left out of my house a bag for them to pick up this morning. And I totally forgot. So it slipped my mind. So they sent me an email. I'm sorry, I drove by your house to pick up the bag, and it wasn't there. Should we do it another time? So I said, oh, I started writing. Oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot. And then I wrote, well, maybe I need to tell him that I'm sorry you went out of your way for coming, I harmed you. And then I said, well, that's not enough. Maybe I need to tell him what I need to do to fix it. And I said, don't worry, next time I'll make sure. And I said, maybe that's not enough. I need to start saying to him, well, so you can sometimes get a little bit lost when you're trying to apologize. You realize that you want to make sure that it hits the mark where it is. So it's unnecessary on an email, but with the spouse, it actually is very important that you get the right language, that you understand well. This is very important that you get this clear, because we spend our lives apologizing. That's the nature of married life. And if you really want to know how to get to your spouse, to be sincere, to let her or him know, I made a mistake, you really need to be clear on these languages. So do the next two and see that you get it right, working with your respective spouses. Okay, Simos, you're finished with this one. Okay, so this is a very important thing to keep in mind, as we've discussed, to make sure that you get that right as far as the apologies go. Okay, let's move on. I think I have one more thing to say on that, but I don't remember what it is, so we will move on. Okay, activity number three for the evening. If I get to bring a sports analogy for the nature of the relationship of marriage, I think I would take, this is going to be based on, back to John Gottman's research, a casual tennis match. A friendly game of tennis. Now, for those whether you play or don't play, but everybody understands that the way of that tennis works is that someone's going to start on one side of the net and very pleasantly and friendly lob over the ball to their partner on the other side to commence the game of tennis. Now, as the ball comes over the net to the other person, they have in effect four options what they can do. What are our four options for the person receiving this pleasant lob during the game of tennis? Option number one,
smash it back.
Well, we're going to get to that one. So, lob it right back.
I wouldn't do that.
We're going to talk afterwards, okay? So the most appropriate thing to do is to very pleasantly lob it right back. And the game commences back and forth, as the game of tennis goes. However, there are a couple of other options that you have as this ball comes flying over the net towards your side of the court. Option number two is you smash it back.
Just other end, so you have to run all over the
court. Right, which is all in any form of smashing it back, which is making the person run to the far corners in order to get it, or just really rocketing it back in their face in a way where they're not able to handle it. That's one way that we can play this game of tennis. And how do you feel on the opposite end as you playing this nice game of tennis and you lob it over, all of a sudden, bam, something comes flying back at you? So that game's not going to last very long. Not very long at all. There's another option, which is probably worse than smashing it back. What's that?
Don't return it.
Don't return it. That's right. You're on the other side of the net, and here comes this ball, and...
Missed it.
And there it goes. Now you're back on the other side, and you started playing this game of tennis, and you just lobbed it over, and they just watched it go right by. So you try again. So you lob another one over, and you're ready to play tennis, and on the side it comes, and... How long is that game going to go? Now that game is far worse because I tried to play and you just ignored the whole, that game is over before it even gets started. Now, you're not even giving me like a chance, maybe I could fend off the smash back, but like if you're not even going to hit it back, well then this game is for sure over. There's a fourth option, and that is where you try to hit it back, but hit it into the net, or you miss, something happens. Those are technically your four options as to what can happen when a tennis ball is lobbed in a friendly game of tennis. You can lob it right back, you can smash it back, you can ignore it, or you can try and fail. Now, says John Gottman, the secret to a marriage, and I think in the little blurb you've seen the phrase of being unromantically romantic, the secret to romance in a marriage, to an intimate life, to a close, endearing, loving relationship, is really thinking constantly throughout the regular day of this game of tennis. Because in a relationship, particularly a marriage, where you're in close quarters, however large your house may be, it is close quarters for two human beings to exist in. There are constantly lobs being sent from your side of the court to the other. They're what John Gottman calls bids, making a bid for attention. We make a bid for all sorts of things. We make a bid for affection, make a bid for attention, we make bids for conversation, we make bids for emotional support. We are constantly lobbying over light, friendly tennis balls, sort of just looking for a response. And the relationship is built on that simple game of tennis. How do you respond to that tennis ball? It's not very dramatic, and it's usually not very romantic, but the relationship is built on it and based on it because of the effects of your other options. Because when that lob comes over and you smash it back, the game ends. As well as the game ends when you ignore it. When the lob is there and you don't respond at all, there's really no game to play, and we are constantly sending these bits. Now, just to get a sense of what I'm talking about, children, for example, of the 3 to 4 year old version, the average 3 to 4 year old, we're not even talking about a precocious child, just your average run of the mill 3 to 4 year old can make between about 37 and 40 bids per minute of their parents. And it sounds something along the lines of, like, mommy, can we go to the store? Can I have ice cream? Can you take me there? Why is this like this? And it's just a constant bid for attention. Constant. It doesn't stop until they're asleep, usually, if you're lucky. But then you still hear it ringing in your head. It's always there. Now, what they're doing is what we do as adults. They are clamoring for our attention. They desire and they yearn to be recognized and to be acknowledged. So they just talk and ask us things and want things. But we as adults do the same thing. The only difference is that children are very good at being very overt and direct. This is what I want, and this is how I want it. And they just say it straight. Take me here. Give me this. Do this. Play with me now. Here. This game. Now. They're just very clear. So we get good at ignoring it, which is not necessarily the best thing, but that's what happens. And there are ways to understand how to respond to that, but that's for parenting class, not for now. But we have the same issue with our spouses, except the bids are not always as overt and direct. And a lot of times they're much more subtle, and insignificant. Small things around the house. Wife is sitting at the table making a shopping list and she says, "Are we out of diapers?" So it's simple, just lobbing out a question. What happens to that question? So Gottman describes the concept of turning towards or turning away. Do we turn towards our spouse or do we turn away from our spouse? So there's been a simple question that's up. So you're busy reading a book in the living room and you hear this question coming from this kitchen. Are we out of diapers? I'm in the middle of reading something. But there's a question that's been lobbed. They're like, there's a house and it's like me and my spouse. And the question was clearly directed to me. But I'm reading and now there's this question out there. Well, what would it look like to lob the ball back?
Yeah.
What response is the appropriate response for that? Yeah, I don't know. Want me to check? Why don't you get him anyway? Just pick him up. We'll need him eventually. Now, what would it look like to smash that ball back? How do I know? Go check yourself. Like, there's a tone in terms of how that's responded to, which is a smash back of a very light lob. What's the worst thing you can do?
Keep reading.
You can ignore it and just leave that question hanging in the air. Well, if that's... Now, this is a very simple, mundane, nothing dramatic or romantic about that. But what happens if there are enough lobs of very simple things? Are we out of this? Are we out of that? Do you know what time the event is tonight? Did you see that email? Those are constantly... Every relationship is built on these little bids for attention. Now, those are really subtle nothing bids, but then the bids get a little bit bigger. I had a horrible day at work today. Now, that's a little bit more of a significant lob. How do you respond to that? I had a horrible day. So, what's the appropriate response is, I'm really busy now. Maybe, or let's talk about what happened. There are lots of ways to appropriately respond to that. And then there's the smash back. I don't have time to talk about it right now, or whatever you respond in a way that's basically slamming the ball back in the person's face, or you basically ignore it. Now, depending on what love language your spouse speaks, which is also why I wanted to start with this, will depend on how significant the lob that was when someone throws out a question like that. Had a hard day, a tough day, to give out a groan. Something is out there in the home. How is that responded to? Now, as adults, because we're also very not wanting to be embarrassed, we sometimes really couch bids in ways that we don't even want to know that we're really asking for something. It's particularly when we're making bids for affection, for attention, for intimacy. There it's much more subtle as we throw out these little feelers to see whether or not our spouse is interested in engaging, because if the answer is no, I don't want to be embarrassed or hurt. So now not only am I throwing this bit out there, but I do it in a way that you really need to be perceptive to what I'm really asking for, because I didn't want to ask for it because I'm afraid that you're going to say no and then it's even worse. So I hide or couch. I don't really say what I want. But the relationship is constantly built on requests being made for attention, for affection, for time, for energy, for whatever it may be. And then it's always a question as to how do we respond to the... Do we turn towards our spouses? Gottman writes that when he watches those tapes that we discussed last week in his love lab, where he would watch the couples interact, the most passionate, loving relationships are built on couples who, when there's a bid thrown out there, it's responded to. Because there's a feeling of connectedness. There's a feeling of, when I call your name, sweetie, and I know that you're only in the room over there, I know that you heard me, when that sweetie is left hanging, the impact is far greater than what you can imagine. And a romantic weekend getaway will be meaningless for a couple who, during the week, little calls like that are either smash-backed or ignored. There wasn't a turning towards. And if you'll pay attention, you'll be amazed how many instances we do this without paying attention to it. So I love this particular tool. It just gives the words for what's going on in terms of being able to respond in a positive way so that in the home is filled with positive interactions. And if you'll pay attention to this, it is palpable that when I know I say something, there'll be a response in an appropriate, positive manner. And it's not dramatic. And it's not romantic. It's just, the lob was sent back. And the game continues. Because when it's not sent back, the ramifications are enormous. So what I have for you tonight, our final little activity. So Gottman presents this I needs list. It's a list of I needs. He's trying to train us in this particular exercise that he created that I adapted to actually be better at overtly stating what it is that we need so that we're able to better handle it. But there are really two parts to the activity. One is being able to say it. Two is being able to hear it from the other spouse. That when one spouse says, this is the need that I have, this is what I need from you, to be able to hear that in a non-defensive way and recognize, yes, that's, yes, I hear it. Let's see what we can do to work on it. Now, what I did is I totally adapted this from his way. I added in a bunch of obviously only related to Jewish people type of stuff and changed some of them. The way that he does it, it's also not the way that I'm asking you to do it for our last few minutes. He actually asks you, as a couple, to choose your top two or three and to then work on that, where each spouse turns to the other and says, I need X, Y, or Z, whatever it is, and have the other person be able to hear it, respond, and figure out how they can help make that work. I decided not to do that. It was a little bit too heavy. So what I did is, we'll have about 10 minutes, and 9:15 we'll call it. Go through all of them. First, just read them quickly, just to get the idea of what this is. And then start from the top, and talk about all of them. Whether or not this map doesn't apply to us, we're fine. Or this one, yes. And actually work through it. I would imagine you're not going to get through this in 10 minutes. Take it home, finish it up. Go through them. It will create the opportunity, the context, for actually working on a whole bunch of these things, which otherwise does not often have that context to be able to be worked on. And I left a lot of them have like different options. One spouse might think that it does apply, the other one will not. That's how this thing goes, and that's why it's a very valuable activity to be able to throw that bit out there. This is what I need. And then to be able to learn to actually respond appropriately to what it is. So it'll take 10 minutes now while I have you as a captive audience. We'll do it now, and then you can take the rest of it home to continue working on it. And just read it through quickly just to get the sense of what it is, and then start from the top or start from the bottom, whichever one you think you want to do more. And actually go through them one at a time together. Who it applies to, does it apply, what you'd like to see, change the difference in terms of all of these various activities. Well, one other thing, just as you're reading through it, the phrase I need is an interesting phrase in English, and it's a very strong word, I need. I left it there anyway, even though I want would probably be a better phrase, but some of them are needs that we have as people. These are things that I need from you, to hear from you. So I left it in there with the knowledge that most of the time the word need would be a little bit stronger than what actually should apply, but just leaving that in there anyway. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, it is 9:15, which means that I'm not going to hold you any longer. If you did not finish, I highly recommend taking all these cards, take them home, finish them up, work them through. The entire goal is to constantly be engaging in conversation about working on these things. They change, they adjust, but to be in touch and aware of what they are, always. I thank you all for coming. Enjoy.